Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Contending Truth Radio. This is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson, and we're going to have a great show this morning, but we're going to start off with Red Skelton.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion, to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice. The principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that would be eliminated from schools, too.
From the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. Harry Reid, that's your problem, my friend. That's Nancy Pelosi, that's your problem. Barbara Boxer, can you please call me Senator? I've worked so hard to earn that. Bob Boxer, shame on you. 10 years later, shame on you. Because that's the way our country was designed. Dan and I am sure we'll mention the summer of 1787 this morning. Our Constitution was designed because our founding fathers understood some basic principles that if you leave the people in control, it will be great. If you try and control the people, you end up with a mess. That's history. That's not a political opinion. That's not something that can be debated. That is a basic principle, and we can prove that through history, time after time after time after time. The two biggest evidences we've got of this, the two biggest illustrations, would be East and West Germany. When that wall fell down, Barack Obama, which way did the people run? And you know, you're having some chaos down there in Florida this morning, Dan. Obama's trying to close down the oceans and the waterways and everything else down there. But you know, you're down there. You're in Newport Richey. You're a little ways from the bottom of Florida, but down there at the bottom, along that strip of land down there, that sand is magic sand. And if you swim from Cuba and you can stand up on the dry land, you can stay. I don't know if it's that way the other way around. I don't know if you swim from Florida to Cuba. If you get on their land, you get to stay. But we'll never know because nobody's swimming that direction. We got some incredible things going on. I woke up to some incredible news reports this morning. Some insanity. You know, we got some huge problems going on with Obamacare. We knew 4 or 5 years ago. We knew 20 years ago when Hillary Clinton tried to do this. We knew there was going to be some big problems. And all of a sudden, the people that are signing up for Obamacare are going, wait a minute, this isn't what we asked for. This is four times the price. You used to be able to buy online. Somebody that's got a low income could buy insurance for about $40, $50 a month if they chose to do so. And now when you go on there, it's $200 a month is the smallest that you can really get. And we just know, you know, this is Saturday Symposium, and what we talk about here on Contending for Truth Radio each Saturday is a lot of history. And we use history because history repeats itself. We know that. We know what happens if you give a person too much control. Their brain gets out of whack. We know some basics, and we look back on history. We're going to have a great show this morning. This is one of our flagship shows we do each week. Dan and I on Saturdays. We've also got on Tuesday nights, Dan and I, along with Jennifer Montrose and Rodney Stanhope out here in California, and Stacy Toblish, who's on hiatus right now, but she's our other host. Tuesday nights, we talk about parental sovereignty. We talk about Common Core. We talk about sovereignty issues in general, and we have a great discussion on Thursday night. We've got Freedon Miller, not on Contending for Truth Radio. That's back on Underground Hard Drive. And then on Fridays, we do Ladies Bible Class. And we've got two new shows starting, coming up soon. Rodney Stanhope is going to take the Monday night slot. And he is going to create a show about California politics and what's going on out here in California. You know, there's a lot going on. Sometimes we feel like we've almost lost the battle. But I'm going to tell you, Rodney Stanhope has never stopped fighting. And I really think he's making a difference in this state. And we've got some good people running, and he's going to be talking to some of those people each Monday that are running and talking about California politics. And then on Thursday, in the old Freedon Miller slot here on Contending for Truth Radio, at 5 o'clock California time, the IRP6, their organization that's fighting for those wrongful convictions, are going to start up a show and take it each week. Sam and Cliff, we had an episode with them a couple of weeks back. You can find that in our archives. Free the IRP6 wrongful convictions. You can find it there and find out about this horrific story. It's another story of the federal government usurping their authority and basically taking what should have been a bill that wasn't paid, and they turned it into a federal offense. And they've got six men that are sitting in prison now. And that's just the beginning of the story, let me tell you. So we got some exciting things going on. I'm ready to pass it over to you, Dan. I don't know if you looked at the news this morning, the insanity, but I'm sure you have more to say about Obama coming down into Florida and trying to close down the Tampa Bay and the waterways and all kinds of other things. You've got some national parks down there. And the thing is they're spending more money doing this? Then if they just left it alone. And it's, I'll tell you, Breitbart said it right. The Breitbart article, I said it right. The government, the Obama is now trying to run the government by temper tantrum. And it's shameful. It's absolutely shameful. You know, it's one thing to disagree. I've disagreed with Bill Clinton most of my life. There are a few times when him and I have agreed on something that he has said, but it doesn't happen very often. He's got the wrong solutions to the right problems, as far as I'm concerned. I don't have a problem with his motive. I believe Bill Clinton really seriously believes that his solutions and his direction are going to make for a better planet. I believe he believes that. I have a different story about Barack Obama. I think he's a child. I think he's running. He just has no experience doing this in the first place. He never even really held a job. He's been a community organizer. And I'm a community organizer. I'm a community organizer online. I don't get a lot of chance to get down and beat the street. Like some people do, like Rodney, but I appreciate the experience he's got in trying to push his form of politics. That's not the way you run a government, and now they're running it by temper tantrum. And it shows me when the federal government's down there trying to tell Florida what it can do with its waterways, and when the citizens can go out, it tells me that they are afraid and they are losing. I know a lot about temper tantrums. I've got three nieces. One has surpassed the age of temper tantrums. One is almost surpassed. Occasionally it comes back out, and I got a four-year-old who when she doesn't get what she wants, she gets upset, and she pitches a fit, and she doesn't always understand why her way isn't the best. She just knows that she wants to do what she wants to do. And that's the way our president is running right now. His approval ratings have tanked. If you go to Real Clear Politics and go to the presidential approval rating, and you can look at that chart and see where he's been since day one. And he has, for the last year, has done nothing but tank. And I believe this, we haven't seen nothing yet. These last 2 weeks have been pretty hard on him with Obamacare. And people finding out, really, finally, Nancy Pelosi, you were right. We have to pass the bill before we can find out what's in it. Well, now they got it passed, and now the American people are finding out what's in it. And you can just deal with it, Nancy Pelosi, because it is not being very pretty. I am seeing comments all over the place. So there's my opening remarks, Dan. I'm going to pass it to you. It's kind of insanity, but that's what we're here for. If we had no insanity, you and I would have no reason to get on Saturday mornings and talk about it, would we?
Exactly. I mean, what's going on down here in Florida is just, it's a joke. I mean, Obama trying to do what he is by closing down our waterways is, well, for one thing, it's not going to happen. No matter how hard he tries, you're going to see, first of all, Key West did do what it did in the early 80s. Key West will just secede from the nation, just like they did in the 80s. They put up borders, and they called themselves the Conquered Republic. And they said, screw you, to the country. And the country finally said, well, okay, we'll back off. But they still call themselves the Conquered Republic. And you're going to see the rest of the Keys do the exact same thing. They're going to follow right in stride. They're a different group of people, and you aren't going to tell them what they can do with our state waterways. That's our state. We're a sovereign state. We are part of the United States, but we are a sovereign state. That means we have our own laws, and we handle our own things down within our state lines. And I believe it's 6 miles offshore is actually state property. So what Obama's trying to do is illegal, for one thing. And you'll see maybe the southern part of the state down in Miami, and where the Wicked Witch of the South lives. Can't even remember her last name right now. But anyway, you'll see that Miami and Lauderdale go, maybe they'll go along with it. The rest of the state will be up in arms. And if Obama tries to enforce this, he better come down prepared because it's not going to happen. I know up here we're already saying the heck with you. And if you dare try to enforce this, there's going to be heck to pay. This administration is a total... it's shameful. I mean, I agree with you with what you were saying with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, one thing I'll say for him is he believed in what he was doing. You know, when he passed the Fair Housing Act in the mid-90s and got the subprime loans and raised it from the SBA, told the SEC to raise the subprime limits, and then had Fannie and Freddie fund these. And when they became saturated with the subprime loans, they were told to sell them out to the national banks with the assurance that they would be supported by the federal and backed by the federal government. But when the bubble blew, the federal government, there was no way it could do that. And so Barney Frank and his old perfect way blamed it on Bush. I mean, as soon as the thing went south, so did it, you know, he ran. And, you know, now we're to this guy, this president. He has no managerial knowledge. He has no idea how to manage. And you can see that because he doesn't. He does not manage. He just basically hides. Jumps on Air Force One and waste our money at solicit more money for the Democratic Party. As a president, he hasn't done anything. I mean, he knows that there is no way Obamacare can fly. It cannot be funded. It is absolutely impossible. And he shut down three parts of it on his own. And now that the Republican Party wants to shut down the rest, he's having a cow. And, you know, he's acting like a spoiled three-year-old having a temper tantrum. And, you know, it's shameful. Most of the countries in the world are just fed up with us. The Middle East, they're announcing that Obama is Muslim and that his brother is... like third in command of a Muslim Brotherhood and Al Qaeda. You know, and it's like the rest of the Democrat, what is really shameful is the rest of the Democratic Party is going along with this. They're going along supporting a terrorist organization and not saying a word. And Nancy Pelosi is. She's a total, I mean, she always has been. She's a joke. Same as Barbara Boxer. I remember when she was elected when I was living in California, and she was shutting down all the national land, saying that our four-wheeling was destroying the desert. When anybody, the group called California Off-Road Association, and their motto is tread lightly. And if you go four-wheeling or exploring the Californians at deserts, after you get a half mile away from any populated area, it's pristine land. You do not see four-wheel tracks all over the place. The only place you see are on trails that have been there for years. Most of the trails come from the 1800s. So there's no damage being done to the desert out there. And I can testify to that by firsthand knowledge. You know, and you have this crap going on with the EPA that are passing laws strictly to harm our economy, not to have a cleaner environment. The regulations they're instituting are a joke. I mean, it basically everything about this administration is a joke. And what's getting me is that they have bought out basically the entire Senate, the entire Congress. It's shameful on our federal government. You know, there's a saying that goes down and says, absolute power breeds absolute corruption. And we're seeing this happening right today. You know, Red Skelton said it perfectly. It's the people who are the power, not the government. And we have to remember that. We have to remember that, listen, it's the people who govern this country. We just put elected representatives who are supposed to be speaking what we want. But our representatives have forgotten that because their wallets are full. You know, this president has spent more money than all the presidents combined and can't account for most of it. Now, what does that say? I mean, this is a joke. And then they go play it, well, it's a fix Bush's problems. And it's like, what are you thinking about? You know, you're saying you're going to spend 20 times more to fix what somebody spent. It's like somebody spent a dollar, and you're saying it takes $5,000 to repair what that person, that $1 spent. I mean, and then he goes out and creates this Obamacare, which is constitutionally illegal. Each state is supposed to govern itself with a limit of a very few laws. And if you look at the Constitution, they are spelled out where they have the authority. Otherwise, the authority lies with the state. Each state, this country was designed to have the majority of the power distributed amongst the states, not with the federal government. And the federal government has decided not to even pay attention to the Constitution and is turning around and doing as they please Obama has broken more constitutional laws than Carter has liver pills. I mean, Congress could have done something so many times. I mean, Nixon's Watergate doesn't even seem to be a trickle compared to what Obama's done. Nixon never killed anybody. I mean, Benghazi, you're talking, you know, he was awakened by his aide who were telling him that, you know, the embassy was under attack. He told his aide to go away and went back to sleep. The next morning, he's awakened and told that his ambassador was assassinated. He said, fine, I'm going on a fundraising mission. And then spent how many hundreds of millions flying Air Force One around. That's a disgrace. I mean, and then he turns around and, you know, supports the Muslim Brotherhood and essentially chases Christians back. I mean, it's feeling like we're going back to, you know, the year 300, where the Christians were being chased and persecuted. I mean, it feels like it's almost a dirty word to say you believe in God today. I mean, what's wrong? I mean, if last week I posted a thing on on the Constitutional Convention, and before we started, we spent the first four weeks in a deadlock where we couldn't get a single thing done. And it just, we sat there and just argued amongst ourselves. And one of our elders and one of my favorite members of Constitutional Congress, Benjamin Franklin, came out and stood up and addressed Congress, and he said that this is, you know, when we're in the middle of the Revolutionary War, we are praying to Congress, I mean to God, every day. I mean, Franklin finally sat there and just kind of shook his head. And he goes, and let me please read this. He goes, in this situation of this assembly, group of men that were in the dark to find political truth and scarce enabled to distinguish it when presented to us. How has it happened, sir, that we have not hereto once thought humbly of applying to the Father of the lights to illuminate our understandings? In the beginning of the contest with Great Britain, when we were sensible of danger, we had daily prayer in this room for the divine protection of honor and protection. Our prayers, sir, were heard, and they were graciously answered. All of us who were engaged in the struggle must have observed frequent instances of the superintending providence in our favor. To that kind of providence, we owe this happy opportunity of consulting in the peace on the means of establishing our future national felicity. And now we have forgotten that powerful friend? Or do we imagine that we no longer we no longer need his assistance? I have lived, sir, a very long time. And that time I lived, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been answered, sir, and in sacrifice and writing, that the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without the concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building. No better than the builders of Babel, we shall be divided by our little partial local interests. Our projects will be confounded, and ourselves shall become the reproach and byword down to the future ages. And what is worse, mankind may hereafter from this unfortunate instance despair of establishing government by human wisdom and leave it to chance of war and conquest. I therefore beg leave to move that henceforth prayers imploring the assistance of heaven and his blessings on our deliberations be held in this assembly each and every morning before we proceed to business, and that one or more of the clergy of the city be requested to officiate in that service. This is Franklin addressing Congress, imploring that we pray for God's guidance. And does he believe, and as I do, that this nation could never have come to being without divine intervention? And we've forgotten that. And we have a president who is telling us that God is evil and push him aside. I mean, I can't support a person like that, and I cannot support the Nation of Islam. If we look around every day, we see Muslim attacks that kill people, innocent people worldwide, and it doesn't happen on isolated incidents. This happens all the time, and yet here in this country we say that they're a religion. They aren't a religion, they're a terrorist organization. And of the few that say they aren't involved in it, they are members of mosques who are. Therefore, the thing, you know, when there's a robbery and three people are doing the robbery and one has a gun and kills somebody, all three people are charged with murder. Well, this person may not be involved directly with what's going on, but you know something? Guilt by association. And as far as I'm concerned, the Nation of Islam should be declared a terrorist organization and they should be, and every mosque should be closed, and anybody who is not a legal citizen of this country should be deported, and it should be treated as such. And I know I'm going to get a lot of flack on that one, but, you know, go back to our problems with the Muslim populace. You know where it began? 1750 with the Barbary Wars. And it the first time we had to send troops overseas was to fight fight against the Muslims in Tripoli. They called this a Tripolian War. So this has been going on since the very foundation of this country. They have been nothing but a thorn in our side. And now they're trying to take over the country and the world. And I think it's time we need to say enough is enough and stop it. Those are my opening comments. Over to you, Scott.
Exactly, Dan. I was posting the show on Facebook and doing a couple of things, so it took me a second to get here. So many important things, Dan, and you're right. We've got a mess. When it all comes down to it, we work our way into a mess. You know, it has been amazing to me, and I blame George Bush for this. I am going to blame him to this day for this. His messaging stunk. And, you know, when they started blaming him for this housing crisis, and if you're listening to me right now, of the whole show, of everything you say, this is what I want you to hear, listener. It's very, very simple. Starting with the Carter administration, the left groups that believe everything should be fair and that believe people shouldn't work hard and get a whole bunch more and then other people don't get anything, try and make it fair, pushed and pushed and pushed the banks to give people bigger loans for smaller incomes. Bigger loans for smaller incomes. And I'm a firm believer in helping people that need help. I'm a firm believer in, you know, if somebody's just close to getting a home and if they just had a chance, they could make it work. But they just don't, you know, the banks are just not quite there yet. I'm a firm believer in, you know, you got the guy at church and he helps out by giving the loan. There's ways of helping people. But when you let government try and accomplish that task and order the banks to give money to people for a house, they can't afford it yet. And then it didn't stop there. It didn't stop there, Dan. It went further. Now they want to give them bigger and bigger houses. Because if the guy down the way that's got $1 billion and own that nice big house, why should this person be stuck buying this little tiny fixer-upper? And they pushed and pushed for decades. They've pushed to make it where people who were not ready yet for that responsibility could get something that they could not handle. And they pushed it and pushed it and pushed it, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon, because of that money going into the housing market, partly, the prices of houses raised and raised. And then people took out loans. They took out seconds because they had a lot of equity in their houses. Things were going good. But, you know, it all falls apart at some point. Because there's a reason why those people in the first place couldn't get a loan, because they weren't ready for it yet, the bulk. And that does not mean that all of that work that the left did over the years didn't help some legitimate people that really did need some legitimate help and made it. And they just needed that little push, and owning a home improves your financial condition, and they've excelled. I imagine there's a few in there. But there's a big bulk. They weren't ready yet. They didn't have the personal responsibility, or they hadn't achieved that late in life. You know, my sister is in there watching with my nieces, Leave It to Beaver. And the last time I walked through, she made the statement. She said, you know, you look back at that time, and it's just a little bit better time. And you know, I want to tell you about that time because that's what this show's about. This show is about been there and done that. And I wasn't alive in the 50s. I didn't experience the 50s as a kid. But I'm going to tell you there were some basic truths. And that's not to say everybody lived a Leave It to Beaver family. Some did, though. Some had great lives that were calm and cool and collected like that. But what happened was you know, you turned into a teenager, and you started getting your first jobs. And you didn't make a whole lot of money on that job. In fact, excuse me, some people worked newspaper routes and really didn't make a whole lot of money. But they, you know, if they wanted a car, they saved for it and got it. If they wanted to just blow their money, they blew the money, and that was the way it went. And then, you know, they got a little older, and they got another job, and they made more money, and they got a little bit of experience, and they learned. They learned the basics about work ethic, and they learned the basics about different things that you need to know while you work. And then they got a little older, and that job, they kind of outgrew it, so they went to the next job, and they've got experience now, and they make a little bit bigger paycheck. And it goes on and on, and then pretty soon, you know, maybe they got married, and they saved their money and put a savings account, and pretty soon, after working towards it, they get to the point where they can go, honey, we can buy a house. And then many people bought houses. Some people, it took them a little longer to get there. You know, some people were ready to do that in their early 20s. Some people were not ready to do that into their 40s. But they worked hard and they got there. And that system worked great. What this country was built on, the finest years of our country, were built on that basic concept. But when you go in and you try and mess with that and you try and say, well, the guy, it's not fair that he has to wait to 40 to buy a house. Let's make sure the bank gives it to him, even though he can't afford it yet. And the government comes in and regulates that situation until we had what the outcome was. The outcome was that the housing market fell apart. People were starting, when things get a little bit bad at that point, and our economy took a little bit of a dive, you got to be ready for the dive. You got to be ready. The economy's not always going to be good. It's not always going to be bad. And when you own a house, you got to be ready for the dive. You don't want to cut it all the way to the bottom of the barrel when times were good, because when times go bad, you're going to be in a mess. And so our economy broke a little bit, and all those people that over for decades, slowly but surely, adding, that weren't quite ready yet, didn't have the full responsibility with their money yet, and then they start losing their houses. And then they blame George Bush, because he believes in a free market system. And that, Dan, I'm telling you, that is as clear as it gets. That is as easy as it gets. That is where the problem came from. We can trace the problem. And not only can we trace the problem, we know, because we can look back in history and see that happening in different ways before. That's why I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. Because I believe in the free market system. I believe that when big government gets a hold of something, they always mess it up. I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a believer in that in business. I'm going to tell you some of the. I'm a firm believer in the corporate world and the ability to make a dollar, and it's because of the corporate world that we have multiple TVs in our houses. We can afford the televisions. It's because of the corporate world that the prices come down on some of these things so that the average American can afford them. But I'm going to tell you, businesses are stupid sometimes. They get too big, and they can't control because they can't micromanage. And it makes them a mess. Because your problem in business is always the guy at the top has no idea what the guy at the bottom has to do. So we can see the same concept in business. If I owned AT&T, I would probably personally myself split it up into four or five smaller companies. And I would be telling my customers, we're doing this. It's not necessarily financially savvy on the big end, but we believe it's going to be because you're going to get better customer service and you're going to support us. That's a basic. So I say that for all the liberals that might be listening to us this morning. That's a basic. I agree. I put it with my government as well as the free market system. What I don't believe is I don't believe the government needs to be coming in and telling AT&T they need to split up into five different companies. I don't believe that. I don't believe that works. Big government. And the left is pushing one way. This is a tug of war. This is the basic of what we're doing, Dan. It's a tug of war between the side trying to pull us to full government control, to pull us over to a side where Americans are allowed to do with their money what they need to do and accomplish things within a basic set of safety standards. Safety for our country with our military. Some basic safety. I don't want to buy a house and find out that the guy only used two nails. I think there's some common sense in some of our structures and things that could get hurt. I don't want just anybody building an apartment complex in San Francisco that doesn't have some kind of good ability to make it through an average earthquake. But boy, Dan, in Palo Alto here in California, their city council just required that every new house being built in Palo Alto have a charger in the garage for an electric car. So now you may never plan on having an electric car. You got to have that. That's included in the price of your new home now. And I'm all for it, man. I would love to just have an electric car. That all you had to do is plug it in and you could go anywhere you wanted. Go 7-8 hours a night and park at the hotel and plug it in and go the next day and never have to pay for gas? Oh, my goodness. Except for the fact that it costs more than it does for the gas to make the electricity, and actually electric cars are worse on global warming, quote-unquote global warming, than gas-powered cars are. So the left doesn't win that argument, but I do. I think that would be great to have an electric car, and all you got to do is plug it in. Never have to go to the gas station. My sister's sitting here listening to me, and I'm sure she's got a big amen for that. She hates to go to the gas station. She doesn't want to go put gas in the car. I think it would take stress off of her. She could just plug her car in every night. But she says that's what husbands are for. But for the government to tell us we have to do it, it doesn't work. And we can take the same principle and put it on Common Core. There is no reason for a big superstructure to tell our little independent school districts how they should deal with our children, the parents. That rule of law needs to be coming from the parents in the community, not from the federal government. It doesn't even need to be coming from the state government. And again, you've got to have some regulations. You don't want some school in some far-out region just deciding they're going to just start teaching until the sixth grade and then they give everybody a high school diploma. But, the federal government doesn't need to be involved in it. State government doesn't really need to be involved in it. Common Core is designed, supposedly, to get us all on the same curriculum. We've been that way for decades. The basic curriculum has been common for decades. In the fifth grade, you generally learn about your state. You learn states and capitals. In the eighth grade, you learn about the Constitution. You start pre-algebra. You start expanding on the sciences a little bit and getting more into the living things and the physical things of this earth. When you're in kindergarten, you learn how to read and you learn the letters and the sounds and shapes. We've had a basic curriculum. We've had it for a long time. And the public school system got us where we're at today. Look at this great country. Even with all the mess and with the temper tantrum going on in the White House, we're still a great country. And that's how we got there. We didn't get there with Common Core. We didn't get there by the federal government telling every single teacher exactly how they have to teach. We didn't get there that way. Our taxes, the same way. I've been a believer in this, and I've said this for years. I think that the federal government should be taken away from collecting taxes at all. I think the states should collect the taxes. And the states can then turn around and give a percentage, worked out however, to the federal government, and that's what they get. And if they overspend and they need more money, they've got to justify it to 50 states in order to get there. I've been waiting for a candidate to run on that for a long time. It solves all the problems. You could actually collect less taxes and bring in more taxes that way. Why do we need to know that? Because with that 80,000 page, 80-year-old tax code that we've got, it takes 30 cents for every dollar the government collects to pay to have it collected. We're only running on 70% of the income, gross, after you take out the basic money it takes to collect it. That's insanity. And we've got that big tax code, and when Congress, when a few people want to change the tax code a little bit, they can change it, and nobody really knows about it, doesn't make the news. That's why I supported 999. That's why I support any. I don't care what. And I said this even while we were hot on 999, and I like it. It's Jack Kiff's 10-10-10 from the Reagan years. Just minus one. I'd be happy with 10-10-10. Actually, I think that's a better sell than 999. But I don't care what the solution is, as long as you wipe out that tax code and start from scratch, because it represents big government overreach. And now what do we have? We've got the IRS. This week it comes out that after Dr. Ben Carson in that prayer breakfast laid it out on the line to the president, and then all of a sudden the FBI, the IRS shows up. But you know what? They blew it. It's going to backfire on them, Dan. Because if he runs for president, I'll tell you what the rest of the story was. Paul Harvey had the rest of the story. We miss him dearly. We have to get some clips of him and play them. I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. Dr. Ben Carson was very nice and kind and opened up all his books, and they went through everything and found everything immaculately perfect. Thank you, Barack Obama, for paying for the biggest commercial, the biggest selling point, the biggest knock right back in the face he can have against any opponent for anything he runs. You know, they spent a lot of time and money knocking all over Mitt Romney on his tax returns. Thank you, Barack Obama, for handing us back that little piece if Dr. Ben Carson decides to run. You went to all the work to prove that it was immaculate. And in the process, prove that you're willing to use a government entity to attack your opponent. That's not just bad politics. That's bad character. You don't act like that. You know, I'm standing around these bills. I teach you don't act like that. That's not nice. It's wrong. The federal government's doing it. The IRS is letting them. These guys with the National Park Service, they're just doing their jobs. I understand a lot of them. But, you know, he's making them go out and put barricades up purposely to keep World War II veterans. And you know what? There's another one. Thank you, Barack Obama. The right person uses it in the right campaign, I'm going to tell you. It's time that the Democratic Party split from the left, because I'm a little bit confused, Dan, just a little bit. My dates are off, but wasn't their most favorite Democrat? Wasn't those boats, you know, those 109 things, those PT-109s? It doesn't look like
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Who was that guy, that president? He was a good one, too, for the most part. I didn't always agree with everything, and I definitely didn't agree with his lifestyle. But he had leadership. Whether it always worked out or not, he had leadership. And he had scruples, and he had moral. And, I'm going to talk to the listeners. If you're a liberal and you support John Kennedy, I'm going to tell you he'd be ashamed right now. John Kennedy, if John Kennedy were alive today, it would be over for Barack Obama. John Kennedy would be down at the White House right now. I guarantee
almost
it.
Almost definitely.
Because he had morality. His character with morality sucked. But his character for concern for this country and love for this country and love for his fellow man didn't.
He came from the greatest generation. And remembering his inaugural speech, he goes, "Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country." And what happened to that? Oh, because Obama's not. I mean, Obama's saying the country's going to do everything for the people. And you're going to be little puppets for the country. Kennedy didn't believe in that. I mean, and, you know, John F. Kennedy, I didn't agree with everything, as you said. You know, the Bay of Pigs was a mess. But the Cuban Missile Crisis was probably one of the greatest acts of any president in history. When he stood firm with two countries with their fingers on the button, ready to launch a nuclear war. And had Kennedy made the wrong decisions, the decisions that LBJ wanted, LBJ wanted an invasion. And Castro later said, had the U.S. invaded Cuba, there would have been a nuclear strike and World War, and we wouldn't be here talking today. Gives you an idea that we, back then, we knew how to pick people of character. You know, the Greatest Generation, and for Obama to even consider trying to close that down to these men who gave everything for this country is beyond shameful. And when senators moved and congressmen moved the barricades and the park police stood there, a reporter went over and said, "Why aren't you stopping these vets from going in?" And the guy, the park ranger said, the park police said, "Well, first of all, I was a veteran myself." And he goes, "I will never stop these brave men from paying homage to their lost comrades." And you know something? I sat there with a little bit of pride there, sitting going, you know, if Obama goes much further, his military is going to go after him. Because the average SEAL, U.S., the average SEAL, the average Ranger, the average soldier out there fighting today in Afghanistan, he believes in his oath or her oath that he took to uphold the Constitution of the United States and to defend it. And Obama doesn't understand that, and he doesn't understand that a lot of these people in the military are third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation. I mean, the B-52 bomber, they were interviewing a guy a couple months ago. His great-grandfather flew one of the first B-52s, and now he's flying them. Almost 60 years later, you know, the B-52 is an ancient plane, but it gives you, it kind of gives you an idea of what it is to be in the military and these type of people. You know, John Kennedy had to beg his father for to allow him to get a commission, because John Kennedy's back was messed up, and he had Addison's disease. He was 4F, but he begged his dad to be allowed to join the military. And look at what he did. He ended up, you know, his PT boat gets run over, and he ends up swimming 5 miles to a beachhead with a guy's life jacket strapped in his teeth. And then he swam to another island to get natives who got a hold of a coastal watcher, and that's how he ended up getting saved. And this is a person that physically could not actually do this. But that's why they called it the Greatest Generation. You know, General Patton in the Battle of the Bulge, during the beginning of the Bulge, he heard about Bastogne being surrounded. He disengaged. He was in a fight 100 miles south. He disengaged the Third Army, an entire army. He left, I think, one division behind. And he brought this entire army 100 miles north and had them re-engage the Germans inside of 24 hours. To this day, people say that was impossible. Why? It was because of the heart of the people, the soldiers. They were so proud of this nation, and they were being hell bent that nobody was gonna take our nation. And we have a president today who is a disgrace to these people. I wouldn't even allow him at the American Cemetery in Luxembourg. You know, 5,100 American soldiers are buried there from the Battle of the Bulge. Another 87,000 American soldiers were either killed or wounded in the Battle of the Bulge. And I wouldn't allow that SOB even close to them. I wouldn't allow them to be disgraced by him. I'm sorry. I'm very, as you can all tell. Right. Yeah, go ahead. but, you know, he doesn't understand what he's dealing with. And the one thing is, there's a lot of us out there who still have that American pride. You know, you and I are not alone. Every day I have, you know, 5 to 10 friend requests of other people who feel the same as you and I, who believe in God and country. I read that, and I know I messed it up, but I mean, I read that thing by Benjamin Franklin. But Franklin said, no empire can be built without God. And after 4 weeks, we went and started asking God for guidance. And look what happened. Look at what was created. The greatest nation on earth. And then what happens is we get this left group who pushes God aside And look what happens. The country is going down the tubes. We aren't too far to, you know, we can still be saved. But there's been so much damage done because of people like this poor excuse of a leader who is having a temper tantrum like a three-year-old. I have heard him blame everybody. I mean, I'm waiting for him to blame his dog. I mean, he blamed everybody for the problems in this country but him. Yep, go ahead.
Well, you know, Dan, you laid the foundation. And it all comes to taking God out. We know that because we can look through history. All the way through history. We can follow that. And we can see the repercussions. But it's not, you know, they say taking God out because that's the illustration they want. But what they are really doing, they really want, they're not worried about whether God's up there or not. They don't care about that. They want the standard out. They want the ruler out. They want anything goes in your personal life standard of morality. Now, they don't want that in your everyday living. They want the government, the federal government, to take care of that for you and to teach you how to do that and to make you do it a certain way so that everybody can, if they want, do their own thing. And it's about taking the standard out. And, you know, it's insane. But I'm going to tell you, Dan, and you and I, over the next year and a half, are going to have a lot of opportunities to interview some candidates and different people fighting the fight as we head towards 2014. I'm going to tell you right now, every one of these candidates, Obama can face a total landslide loss in Congress in this next election. I really think this barricade thing and this federal shutdown thing, I think the bulk of the American people is going to see it as a temper tantrum. If you go to Real Clear Politics, go to realclearpolitics.com. And at the top in your bar, it says polls, and click that. And then when you click that, it says presidential approval poll. And go and look at that. And look at those trend lines from a year ago in December where he was, which still wasn't that good. Even when he re-won the election, his poll ratings were not the best in the world by a long shot. That's why a lot of people really thought he was in big trouble. And that's with some skew in the polls. When you get into the ones that are important are the registered or the likely voters. Likely voters. That's what it goes to. I'm going to tell you, he's been on a sliding fall for a year now almost. And I'm a firm believer that all of these things we're talking about, Dan, I know the stats. I've looked for years. I love polls, and I don't just look at one poll. I look at them all, and I try and get a feel for what people feel in different demographics. And they're not always the most accurate in the whole wide world, but, you know, when you look at them all as a big whole, they do show a lot. And one thing I know is since I was a kid, when you go out and actually poll the people on what they say they believe, 10 to 12% for decades believes in the far left, and 60% call themselves conservatives. You know, I got a tweet the other day, a response back to something that I forwarded or something from Melissa. And the person basically said, you know, we know that it's what the American people want because Obama was reelected. And I'm not going to get into a diatribe about the cheating that was done. I'm not going to get into a diatribe about some of these other things. But I will say this. Sorry about that. I will say this. The American people have polled at 60% consistently that are not behind Obamacare. Now, maybe that whole 60% isn't totally 100% against just wiping out the whole thing. They've had a real hard time since before its inception, during over that Christmas weekend of insanity when they pushed it through by hook or by crook, people aren't happy with Obamacare. And it's getting worse. We now know what's in it. And, Dan, I really firmly believe that any Republican candidate that runs their race right, and they got to run it right, they don't need to be attacking their opponent. They don't have to attack their opponent. They have to paint their opponent with the painting of the far left. Yeah, I know my opponent may not be here, but I'm going to tell you where the goal of his team is. Here's what the goal of the team he's on. American people need to learn it. And as soon as the candidate gets out there and starts explaining to everyday Americans and telling them what they don't hear on the news. You know, a lot of people in the country, they couldn't even tell you what Benghazi is. There's a bunch of our people in this country that if you said Benghazi, they'd go, I have no idea what you're talking about. And if we will get those candidates, and if they'll get out there and go back to the basics, talk about basic principles, and work on winning the minds and the hearts of their constituents instead of playing the old stupid game of let's get together, first thing we got to know is how can we raise a whole bunch of money. And get out there with their teams, it's going to happen. Let me tell you, that's what Monday's show is going to be about. Rodney Stanhope, man, he's the king in California of the worker bees. And he's got an incredible organization. He's got some incredible connections. He works hard, and the people that work with him work hard, and they do grassroots stuff all over California, and there's some things being accomplished. And we just took away from California, from the Democrats, we took away their two-thirds. They've had two-thirds for a long time. We just took it away in San Diego last week. That's huge. I believe when we get to 2016, it's going to be even bigger of a landslide because we're going to start seeing a lot. 2016, when we vote in November of 2015, let me tell you, in November of 2016, I'm going to tell you, Obamacare is going to have been around a couple of years. Now, we've just seen what we've seen over the last 3 days, well, 4 or 5 days, a week now. What'd they do, open it Monday? And it's already chaos and insanity. And when we get to 2016, if the Republican loses, it's because the Republican Party is just dumb, and just let them have it at that point. Let the socialists have it. Let them take it. Those of us that are Christians, when it all comes down to it, whatever happens, happens. We live with a different attitude about life anyways. We look at those hurdles differently anyways. I'll tell you, to be frankly honest with you, I'm going to step into the realm of a preacher for a moment, and I'm going to tell you what I would say as a preacher about the future of this country. The church always grows strongest during times of severe mess. The first century, the book of Acts, that first century church grew between the Jewish hierarchy and the government of Rome by leaps and bounds, and they were persecuted. The writer of two-thirds of the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, wrote from Romans all the way up to Philemon. He was jailed 3 times. Remember, he was converted on the road to Damascus, killing Christians, and the church grew by leaps and bounds. And let me tell you, we only get strong through diversity. So, as far as the future of my nieces, man, if we don't have the lifestyle that I had growing up, I want them to have that. But it won't be the last thing if they don't. If they've got to live through worse than what our greatest generation was born within, the Depression, we have to go through that. If our country has to go through another one of those, Christian's going to be fine. As long as the Christian holds on to all things work together for good for them who love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. As long as the Christian understands that, it's just the hurdle we've got. Unfortunately, two generations ago didn't have this hurdle. We've got this hurdle. Things are poor. We don't live the lifestyle we used to live. Unfortunately. But that's okay because this world is not my home. And you know what, Dan? What you know what really makes me laugh about the left is they don't have that kind of contentment in their lives. They don't ever find contentment. There's always something right on their tail messing them up, whether they be wealthy. I mean, we got some great examples right now. Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus, some of these guys that are just, you know, they're living life, whatever I want, go. And if somebody tries to tell me, you know, it's not a real smart idea, they're a hater. We see, money doesn't change it. We see some of the poorest of poor who make great successes. That's why I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. We've seen some of the most wealthy of wealthiest fall and crash and burn. It doesn't have to do with the money. It doesn't have to do with what you've got. You know what, Dan, you have actually lived the first generation in the history of the world that has had what you've had. The generations before you had very, very little, even if they had, well, even if they were well-to-do. Your generation, in the last 100 years in this country, we've gotten so many things and so many conveniences, and we don't count our blessings enough. You know, I'm walking right now. You know, I do the show from my backyard and walking around the house, and I'm standing in the carport right now, and we got one nice car here, one nice car that's it's gone. It's not here right now. But we got a nice little carport that my grandfather built. And, you know, we've got two. Not just one, but we've got two big air pumps right here with tanks that we can fill the tires with. We don't even have to go down to the gas station to do that. One's my dad's, one's Shorty's. When I fill up that thing on the pool, I just turn it on and fill it up. I don't have to pump. Remember the old bicycle tire pump? Oh, my goodness, if I had to pump that ring on that pool that way or blow it up, it would have never gotten done. But I just turn it on and work it. And, you know, we got a refrigerator inside. It's really nice. I use it to draw with dry erase to teach my 4-year-old niece. She's working on third grade reading right now. And we've got one refrigerator out here. And, you know, it's got food in it. It's got some food that we never did eat. We got some corn in there that looks like it's getting ready to turn back into the dust of the earth. And we got a head of cabbage down there. It looks like it's doing the same thing. And I got a computer that I use, my personal laptop that I use for almost everything I do, and then I got another computer inside that sits next to where I sit on the couch. So we watch Netflix on it sometimes, and I really don't do a lot of political work on it. I keep everything else on one computer. But then we got another computer set up in the kitchen for the girls. They don't have computers in the room. We don't think that's a wise idea. But they've got access to the kitchen, that computer, and they use it. And we got an Xbox now. I didn't ever think we'd have an Xbox. But Stacey got one on the cheap. And let me tell you, we watch our Netflix on it, and we can do all kinds of things on it. Yeah, I'm not going to give it a commercial because I think the thing is stupid. It's a lot better to hook your computer up to the TV if you want to use, like, Netflix and stuff. It's a lot easier. But we've got it anyways, and we play games on it, and that's kind of fun and everything. But, you know, it's all these things that we take for granted. I'm walking up, and my grandfather built four storage sheds, and we've got stuff in them. We've got one's Shorty's, and he's got some of his stuff in there. One's my dad's, who's out traveling around in a 40-foot fifth-wheel travel trailer all over the country. And you know, and why do I say this? Man, we're poor. We're not big income. we're lower middle class, if anything. We live good. We live good in this great country. We live better at lower middle class than you're wealthy of the generation before you. They're wealthy now, with the exception of, you know, always having food and some certain basic items. But the standard of living and what we've got, air conditioning, oh, my goodness, don't get me started on air conditioning, and light bulbs and lights and Let's just look around at the beautiful place that we live, and I see the electrical pole. We got an electrical pole right in the middle of the property. It drives me crazy. But I'm really thankful for it because it operates all my computers, and it operates the air conditioning, and it operates the lights, and it operates the electric hot water heater. Oh, I love my hot water. Generation before you didn't have hot water heaters. They didn't have refrigerators. In fact, those came along in your generation. And, you know, little things make a big difference. I'm looking at the router, my wireless router that allows me to go anywhere on the property and use my phone. I can go up underneath the tree, turn on my phone, and watch Netflix and over the Internet. All the gadgets that I had as a kid, the Walkman, the camera, anything that we had as kids that were gadgets, video games, all these things are all in my phone now. I don't need anything but a phone. I got it all right here. I got my radio. I got my Pandora radio. I got music on it. I've got my phone on it. I got my Facebook on it. I can do Blog Talk Radio on it. I can do a zillion things. Count how many blessings. We live in a standard of living that is absolutely insane in the history of the world. We are living, our poorest of poor are living better than some of the kings in the history of the earth have lived. And it's that standard of living that we look at. It's not the gap between the wealthiest guy and the poorest guy. That is always going to be there. No matter what system you have, you're going to have that gap. But I'm going to tell you right now, America, our poorest of poor are living a lot better than poor people have ever lived in the entire history of the world. In fact, statistics, our poorest are in the top percent of wealth in the world. When you rate the United States with the rest of the world and you show poverty, our poorest of poor still pop out above the huge bulk of the rest of the world. And it's that standard of living that we've got because the founding fathers were smart enough to say that the federal government needs to keep their nose out of it most of the time. Most of the time. The state should deal with most of this stuff because they're better equipped to deal with it. It's a smaller level. You don't have as much waste, fraud, and abuse. You've got more control over it. The people have more say over it. And these are basics. These are basic, basic principles that created this great nation that we've got. And it's a great nation. I look next door, and oh, the guy next door, his dad's back, and his dad drives this big old motorhome. And parks there next to their big old huge pool and the palm trees. They got more money than we got. They got a big huge pool and some palm trees. But I can go over there and use it. We got a little one of those little $150 pools that you blow up the rate and you lift it up. But when I was growing up, the only pools I ever had were those little plastic things that were about 6 inches. I could play better in the bathtub. We got a standard of living, folks. And if we lose that, if we lose that standard of living, and if my nieces raise their children and we're back to one present every Christmas, if that, like we were 100 years ago, they'll make it. They'll make it, Obama. They're not going to fall. You can take everything away from them, but you cannot take their heart. You cannot take their heart. And I'm teaching them, no matter what the hurdles you run over, you jump them. Don't cry in front of them. You jump them, and you do your best. Boy, if a president of the United States wanted to do something for America, he needs to stand up and say those words to this great country. And boy, could he make a difference. I really do, Dan. I'm going to pass it back to you. I think 2014 is hugely ours to lose, even with cheating. I don't think they can cheat their ways past this. I think by the time we get through the next year, and more comes out about Benghazi, more comes out about all these different things that are coming out, including the ramifications of now Obamacare. I think if the candidate wants to win it, there's a basic pattern he has to follow. And I believe if he does, he'll wipe his opponent's slate. If he doesn't, if they want to play by the old tactics, if they want to play, all right, get my campaign team together, get a campaign manager, get this, get my legal stuff ready, and sit down and have our first meeting now. How are we going to raise money? They're going to lose. They're going to lose lose, 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 lose. But if they will sit down in that first meeting and say, how do we get together a grassroots organization that's going to help get me over the field goal? And he gets out and motivates that grassroots, and they change the minds and the hearts of the people by going back and explaining some of these basic principles. Tell them, you know, my opponent wants to label me as a Republican who just wants to take away the safety net. No. No, that isn't flying, buddy. I love the safety net. I love to take care of people that really, really need help. Your team, the left, wants to turn that safety net into a fishing net. And it's ripping at the corners. And the people that really have need have less. I want the people that have need to have more. And I think they'll win the battle. If they let their opponent go on and discuss rape and abortion, and they get off into racism, and they get off onto all of these other fringe subjects that doesn't get anybody anywhere, doesn't tell us where the person's coming from in the first place. We got to go back to the Reagan years. Reagan didn't tell you what he believed. He told you why he believed it. Our candidates have got to get out there and teach why we believe it. When they do, we're going to start winning. Rick Scott down there in Florida, I'm going to tell you, you're on my radar because I helped you. And Team Scott on Twitter, a lot of interaction, a lot of interaction, and I'm disappointed. I'm really, really disappointed, Dan, and we're going to do something with that. I've got that connection there, and they know who Zach Poskovich was, and they know who Teresa, Melissa, and Scott are. And let me tell you, Team Scott, let me tell you, Rick Scott, you better get back and stand on the base. You're trying to run. You're trying to run between two bases, and you're out in the middle of nowhere. And if you get pinned by the ball, you're out, buddy. You better get back to the base and stand there where you're safe. Oh, my goodness, Dan. I'm going to have to tell my dad to listen to this. Did I just give a sports analogy? I don't know where that came from. But we've got a lot of candidates just like that. And instead of standing up for those basic principles, no matter what the other side's going to paint you with, they're always going to paint you as a racist. They're always going to paint you as an evil Republican that wants to take all the money away from the poor people. They're going to do that every time. So walk into it and tell the people ahead of time. You go in there and you defuse the situation. You go, my opponent's going to tell you that I want to take all the money away from the poor people, that I don't want to help black people, that I this, that I that. No. I love helping people. I'm a Christian. I stand on basic principles about helping people. No more. I'm not going to play that game with you. I'm going to tell you exactly what I believe about helping poor people. I believe that your side messes up the help, and it makes it ineffective and provides a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse. So let's throw away the method you've been using, because I don't know if you really believe it's helping or not, but your leadership, the far left's leadership, those that really drive the gears, they know it ain't going to work. They're not trying to help the poor people. They're trying to explode the system. They're trying to make the system fall apart. You know, folks, I'm going to say this before I hand it back to you, Dan. Look up and try and find the movie 2016. Because, you know, it gets to a basic principle, and we don't ever cover this. I don't ever see this covered in debates, in discussion, or anything. And Barack Obama's team, his side, believes that you should make everything fair. You should take the money that these people that have got ungodly amounts of money and spread it out with those people that don't have anything. That's their philosophy. And they, because they want the poor people to come up, and they're still going to leave the wealthy people enough so that they feel wealthy. But for the most part, they want to take it away, and they want to spread it out. That's the goal of the left. That's what they do. That's why we've got global warming. That's why we've got health Obamacare. That's why we've got Common Core. All kinds of things. That's the basic premise behind it. But the president believes that we should do that on the world stage. That because the United States is so wealthy, we should bring it down and pass that money out to those that don't have anything to make everything more fair. That's what that side believes. That is documented. That is not me making an opinion about something. They will tell you that. They will tell you that that's what they want. The problem with that is the wealth of the United States of America has made a better standard of living for many places in the world. And when you do that, you're not going to raise the standard of living of the poor. You're going to lower the standard of living of the poor. That is the way, that is the direction economically it all works. Even your economic textbook will tell you that. Well, at least they did 20 years ago. They probably don't say that anymore. But it's a fact. And watch the movie 2016 and see what this president's mindset is. You know, I go back to mindset a lot. You know, if you want to know the mindset of God, read the Old Testament. You can't find God in the New Testament. He's not there. He's mentioned. But in the Old Testament is where you see him interact with the people on a number of different ways. You know, the book of Hebrews starts out, God has spoken with mankind in various different ways, through the prophets, through different ways. And you can read through the Old Testament and see how God interacted with the people and see the personality of God. We were never given the personality of this man in the White House. But we know what it is because it's documented. It's documented. And I've said this a million times in my lifetime, and I will say it again. If I thought for 5 seconds that you could take the wealth and spread it around everybody and give every single person a better standard of living, I'd be all for it. But it doesn't work. It's a solution that doesn't work. It doesn't fix the problem. What fixes the problem is you encourage the free market system. And the wealth gets bigger for the whole pie. Because we got people down in the poorest parts of Springville, and they got 3 TVs, and they got an Xbox, and they got computers, and they got cars, and they got air conditioning. And they got running water. They got inside toilets. You know, you got to look at the timeline. You know, man, we're in a different time than man's ever experienced, and we've been that way for quite a few generations now. And we're wealthy. We live a good lifestyle. And I'm gonna pass it back to you, Dan. I think if we get these candidates to get out and give the right message. Get the teams out there and get that message out to the people. We can take this country back.
I agree. I'm just worried that everybody's been bought off. We need to put new candidates in so we can bring the system back. You were talking about, you know, me being the first generation of having what, you know, we have today. I grew up upper middle class. And when I was young, we had 2 cars and, you know, a nice house. But we didn't like computers, that stuff, that had not even been thought of. We had, right after the assassination of John F. Kennedy, our country dedicated itself to putting a man on the moon. And we had Vietnam going on. As I said, I consider myself upper middle class at that point. We had a 32-foot sailboat. But when it came down to like toys and things like that, Xbox, all that stuff, that was generations ahead. When I'd go out and play, I'd grab a stick, and that would be my gun, and we'd play World War II. Our whole idea of having fun was getting on our bicycles, riding down to the local park and playing baseball or a game of basketball and trudging through the woods. That was my, you know, and to me, you know, I didn't have a cell phone. Heck, that wasn't even thought of. And I can remember the early days before even the sliding doors that when we go into the grocery store, they weren't around. That was created by actually Gene Roddenberry and Star Trek in 1966. And when they first did that, they had two people behind the set who pulled those two doors open and then pushed them back together. They didn't even have it. Matter of fact, the manufacturer of the first opening doors sued Roddenberry for taking away the for showing the idea. And Roddenberry said, you know, this is fiction. You know, this is something just like antimatter and all that. We had one TV. It was black and white. My first color TV, I was 16 years old. And air conditioning? What's that? I didn't even know. I mean, I'd been in air conditioned rooms, but the first air conditioner I ever had where I slept in a room with air conditioning, I was 24 years old. So I didn't see all these fancy things coming until I was an adult. We never thought we were missing anything. We loved, running around the woods and climbing trees and, you know, chasing critters and hunting for Indian arrowheads. And our dog would be running around with us. And life was great for me. I mean, I consider the life I had as being great. During the summer, my parents would drive me down to the salt pond, and I'd get, we were a member of the University of Rhode Island Sailing Club. It was free. And I'd jump on a little sailboat, which was nothing more than a rowboat with a sail. But I had a blast with that. I mean, I enjoyed that. That was great. You know, we had, I consider, the life of the kings. And then, you know, when I first got into college, we didn't have monitors at our computer stations. We had keyboards. And we punched it in, and we went over to the card stamp and watched the computer cards come flying out of the machine. And we put our programs in a box, and I had to walk it down to the computer center. And we put it into an IBM 360. Which is about computing power. My phone has probably 20 times the computing power. So we didn't have all these fancy things. But, you know, when I was in my 20s, as I said, 24 was first air conditioning. And then I saw it, you know, us evolve and getting all these, what we have today. I had one of the first computer games. It was Pong, which was nothing but a little dot that went back and forth between two sticks. But we thought that was great. I mean, and my family, we only got one present, one major present, and it was split between my brother and I. And the rest, we got some knickknacks from our Christmas stockings. And we had God in our lives. You know, every Sunday I went to church. And I learned about, you know, through Sunday school, you know, we are taught the New and the Old Testament. And we were raised with morals and standards. And we were taught that, you know, if you want something, work for it. I remember I wanted, at first it was a bicycle. And I had to do a paper route to get that. And I would get, you know, $2, you know, $3 a week. I thought that was a fortune. Then I, you know, I wanted to set out for a car. And I started out at 14 years old. And we were baling hay. And I remember our record was we did 2,400 bales. There were six of us. We did 2,400 bales. Each bale weighs 75 pounds. We did that in one day in August, sweating our tails off, scraped up, and got bit by two snakes and a rabbit. But, you know, this was our life back then. And, you know, if you wanted something, you worked for it. You know, in 1978, I bought my first new car. And, you know, I was going through college at the time. And I had to work third shift in a textile mill that was built in 1882. And this textile mill was where the first pre-shrunk fabric was ever manufactured. And that machine was still there. We the machines that I was running on were built in the early 1900s. We were running on direct current power that was generated from a World War One boiler because it used to be all operated by water power, and these machines still were hooked up to those straps. They were still in there. It was Bradford Dyeing Association. I worked for $5 an hour. I worked 45 hours a week and would get out of work, go to work at 11 at night, get out of work at 7 o'clock in the morning. My first class in college was at 8 a.m. And I did that for my sophomore and junior, my junior and senior year. So, I mean, we were raised to work. We were, and our generation, they call us the me generation because when we reached adulthood, we were starting to get all these toys. And we, especially the people on the computer end of things, had good jobs, and we made decent money. I, as I said, I worked, you know, for Raytheon and worked on the Tomahawk program. You know, Reagan had just gotten in, and, you know, we were coming out of a deep recession from the Carter years. And during the Reagan administration, you know, the free enterprise system was encouraged. We had a president who showed us that God was a necessary part of our country. And he constantly encouraged and brought up our forefathers. And with, you know, the guidance from some brilliant people, the economy went from, you know, tanked, almost 0% growth, and it went from being about where it was when Bush took, when Obama took over. And by the end of Reagan's second term, we had, our GDP was almost 5%, not a negative 3% as it is right now. And our country for the next 20 years prospered. And what happened is during those 20 years, our technology grew to the point where everybody could afford these fancy things. I still don't have an Xbox, never have. You know, and people got lazy. People started sitting down there, and, you know, we gave our kids, like every generation before, we wanted to give our kids what we didn't have. You know, just like my father did the same thing, you know, growing up in the Depression, he wanted to give us things that he didn't have, and his father before tried to do the same thing. And the problem was is we gave our kids too much. And we didn't teach them the work ethics. And we got lazy with going to church. And by the time they were raised, they expected it all to be given to them. And they didn't understand that you have to work to achieve these things. And, you know, and then on the other side, we had the government growing and providing more and more social services. And people got lazier and lazier. And all of a sudden it was like, well, you know, I can sit back. And there was a major abuses in social security programs in the early 80s that people would say, oh, well, I got a deviated septum. I can't work. And they sat on their butts. And they raised children who said, oh, look at this. I can sit on my butt and not have to do a damn thing, and I'll get what I, you know, I'll get whatever I want. And it just keeps getting worse and worse. And it's to the point right now where kids don't even know what work is. Everything is, you know, they expect everything to be given to them. They don't understand, you know, what my generation, we were the last ones, what would have meant to sit down there and work. You know, I can't tell you how many years I put in 50, 60 hour weeks. When I first moved here to Florida, I had to give up a lot because it was a, you know, 2,500 mile move. And when I got here to reestablish myself, I got a job and I worked literally 80 hours a week. I worked 7 12-hour days. I didn't even think twice about it. You know, because that's the work ethic that I was raised with. And I had already had a heart attack before that. You know, that was 5 years after my bypass. And I was working 80 hours a week. And I sit down there and I'm seeing what this administration is pushing. And it infuriates me. Because they don't understand what we put in. The amount of work. You know, and he's telling us, no, sit on your butt and let the government pay for it. And he doesn't even have an idea how he's going to pay for this. He's taking away the free enterprise system and is trying to create a socialist nation with no idea how to pay for it. Obama doesn't have a clue on how to pay for it. He doesn't understand the thing he thinks that I'll keep on taxing. And what he doesn't understand is every time you raise a dollar in taxation, you remove a dollar from the economy, which means you weaken the economy. You also weaken the value of the dollar. And he's just bleeding us to the point where soon there's not going to be no more blood left. And if we don't turn things around in this, you know, I'm so disappointed at how our party has been in the last 6 years. Because the Republican Party has sat there and done nothing. And I blame that on Speaker Boehner. I think we have the worst speaker and the worst president in history. And no other representative in Congress or the Senate has stood up and said enough is enough. And it infuriates me. What has Congress done in the last 6 years? Look at all the transgressions Obama has done. Solyndra, Fast and Furious, IRS, Benghazi. I mean, it's major, major infractions. And you hear for a couple of weeks, you know, how terrible, and we're going to get down to this, and we're going to figure out what, you know, and who did, what was the reason behind it, and hell's going to pay. And 2 months later, it's forgotten. You know, we have an ambassador and his aide who was assassinated. We have two CIA, former SEALs who were working for CIA who were killed defending these people. And yeah, they took out a lot of people, but you know something? Obama didn't care. He slept through it. And then he went on a fundraiser. And then he turns around this other idiot who is and takes a gun at Fort Hood and kills 13 people and wounds 23 others, and it openly admits that he did it in revenge. He did it for Allah. And then Obama calls it workplace violence. So these people who were killed in action, as far as I'm concerned, these soldiers get nothing. The ones that were wounded don't get Purple Hearts. You know, how can this, you know, how can we allow this? I mean, I am disgraced. I have been, you know, Reagan was first presidential election I was involved in. And, of course, I voted for Reagan. And in my half century on this earth, and as a historian, a person who loves this nation, since I've been born, there's been two good presidents. I was born under the Eisenhower administration, and Ike was a great man, first to fight for equal rights. That was filibustered by the Democratic Party and Reagan and the rest. You know, Kennedy was okay. I gave him a 50% rating. Because he did one great thing and one terrible thing. So, and now we need another Reagan. And I don't unfortunately see one in the works yet. You know, I'm hoping one comes up. The closest I came was, Kane, I loved Herman Kane, and I thought the 999 idea was wonderful, a fair tax or flat tax is a great idea. We have way overtaxed our companies, and then we get this moron in office, and we're letting him do whatever he damn well pleases. You know, what is wrong with our government today? And I'm praying that if we don't turn around and we don't get people who are going to be running for office who are not going to get involved with those stupid arguments, you know, gay rights or whatever, and then doesn't say, hey, listen, you know, what we're here for is we're here to bring the nation back to where it belongs. And so, you know, we want the free enterprise system. Why? Because it's a proven fact that it works. And we have the evidence to show it does. You know, we have that evidence. We're running out of time here, I guess. So back to you, Scott. Sorry.
we have two minutes. That's no problem. We can go a little bit over. And if you're listening on the online, just call in at 347-205-9620. That's 347-205-9620. And you got a couple of minutes. And you listen that way. We're getting ready to round it out anyways. I want to start off with, Dan, I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, but you mentioned Pong. And I was very fortunate as a little kid. I got one of the very, very first Pong games. My great uncle lived in Seattle, and he worked with the phone company up there, and he was heavily involved when they changed the phones over from more of a manual relay kind of a system over to the electronic system that we have today. He was there, pivotal in that, and he had a lot of connections with people all over Seattle, with like Boeing aircraft and different places. And every time they came down to California to visit, they came down once a year, they would bring me something. And my Uncle Don, I think, had an appreciation for my mind more than a lot did at that age. He always brought me something that tested my mind. He brought me a gyroscope one year and showed me how to use it and explained a gravitational pull and different things with me. But one year, he brought me this little box. It wasn't really little. It was pretty good size, and we hooked it up to the TV, and we played Pong. And he said, "I guarantee none of your friends have this." He says, "Because it hasn't been released to the public yet. This is one of the prototypes, and it's going to be soon released out to the where the general public can just put this machine on their television and play this video game." And he says, "It's pretty cool." And I wore that thing out, and I'm going to say it had to have been either the I'm thinking the summer after the first grade, because we were in Livermore, and I'm going to tell you. I was the most popular kid on the block for a while with that game because nobody had anything like it, nothing like it, not any little handheld blip dot games, anything. That was before Pac-Man. That was before Donkey Kong. That was before little race car video games. They started appearing. We had pinball machines, and when you went to the pizza place, you had pinball machines. And I was raised in the area of video games. I had an Atari. I was never a big video game person, never been that, but I have had my share. And now they're all on my phone, and I can play Pac-Man on my phone if I want, and all kinds of different things we can do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Dan, we had some incredible discussions today, you know, and it really does all go back to Pong. You know, what Pong was you batted that ball from one side to the other. One side, back and forth. And that's what we're doing. The left has thrown us. They're going to give it everything they got. They want a full left society. They want a socialistic society. They want a European socialistic society. Not only that, they really, really would like for the United States to just really take a step back, step down, and not try and be so important, and just be equal with everybody else. And that would be great. You know, it sounds great on the onset if it worked, but it doesn't work. And, you know, Dan, we've got some great things lined up for us. I'm working on getting Don Chamberlain, who ran for the 7th Alabama District, the one that Matt Jenkins is running for now, for that congressional seat. Don Chamberlain, out of all of the candidates that I got to know, he's one of my most beloved. I really like Don as a man, and let me tell you, he ran and he lost. He won his primary, but he lost in the general election. He's in a very heavily gerrymandered district. It's not an easy district, but he didn't quit, and he kept going, and he's still working on the things that he promised, and that's the kind of character he's got. I'm working on getting us to have Don Chamberlain on soon. He's been there, done that. For sure, for many years, he's got some great connections, some great stories. Just a great guy. We've had him a number of times. I've talked to him both personally and on Blog Talk Radio. We've had him as a guest many times. So we're looking forward to that. I'm also working on getting Spike Saris, who created, and if you go to my Facebook page, I again this morning pasted the link to the video. And I'm going to tell you, if you have any doubt, if you're a believer but you've got a doubt in your mind that God created the universe and this earth, I'm going to tell you what my mom told me when I was a little boy. She says, you can look and you can know. You can know without a shadow of a doubt. You can be confident that there was a creator. Spike started out as an atheist and an evolutionist, and he through the space program and through the military and different experiences, as we have sent these probes out into our solar system and beyond, we have learned basically over the last 20, 30 years that everything that evolution taught us about how the solar system came together doesn't work. Nothing fits. Nothing fits the pattern. And that's the key to it. That's how you know if something's right or wrong. I watch a lot of crime drama. I love Bones. I love CSI. And, you know, they've got to find truth. They've got to look and see. And, you know, they sometimes have a suspect, but when they look at the evidence, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit the pattern. So they know that that's not the person that did it. And we can do the same thing with the creation. I can look at the creation and know there's a God. Go watch that video. If you've got any doubts about that, by the time you're done with the video, you won't. And if you're a firm believer in evolution, you need to watch the video. It's a lot of facts, and it makes it very clear that the evolutionary process that's been presented to us doesn't work out in the solar system. We also know it doesn't work here on Earth either. You know, you got to have which came first, DNA or the plants and the animals. Because we got plants, we got DNA in them, we got animals that have got DNA in them. Did it start out as a plant and then the plant turned into animals? Or did the animals at some point leave a plant? Whatever it is, all living things, you know, you always start that tree. That's the tree they take us down to prove to us that monkeys and fish are related. But you got to go back at some point and you got to split off between living things, between plants and animals. And they have a hard time doing that. There's a lot of logic in it. So I'm working on getting a hold of a Spike to have him on a future show, along with a friend of mine, like I mentioned last week, Brad Harab, who basically has the same information as it comes to the creation here on Earth that Spike has for the universe. And I've been looking for Brad's number, and I've got a message into my dad to get me Brad's number. I thought I had it. I don't. And as soon as we do, we'll start planning that. And we got some other guests coming up on other shows on Contending for Truth Radio. We're going to be doing a lot of candidates. We've got Matt Jenkins, a good friend, that's going to take that role of running this time in Alabama 7. We've been trying to help Alabama 7 through three candidates now. Matt will be the third candidate that we tried to help support to win that. Let me tell you, it's an unwinnable situation, which tells me that if the right person does it, it can be a landslide win, because the general campaign rhetoric is that you can't win that. It's too overly populated with Democrats. But I'm a firm believer that if you get out and you teach those Democrats the basics and go back to the basics and show those voters exactly what the goal is of the left and what that team wants to do and compare that to what they actually believe, they're going to flip. They're going to flip on the other side. And I believe that Matt Jenkins... let me tell you this. Let me just say this. Anybody that's been listening to me on Blog Talk Radio at all over the last 3 years, Matt Jenkins, I've been telling him some of this stuff I say on talk radio for a year now, while he was even working for other candidates. And so I really think Matt Jenkins can really do this. I'm a firm believer he can win this. And we're looking forward to that and having a discussion with him. We're going to have Jonathan Barbee. We're going to have him on this show, too. We had him on Parental Sovereignty a couple of weeks ago. And we're going to have him. He's running for Public Service Commissioner. Some of those local elections, they're really important as well. We've got some other fun guests in the works. I'm working on getting into some contact with some people. My life has slowed down just a little bit, and I'm going to try and get a schedule for the next few months of some people. John Stevens, we're going to have him on the show too. He wrote a great book comparing us to the Roman Empire. And that where we've been going for the last 30, 40, 50 years, and you know, he basically says, you know, we've feminized our society. We've made ourselves into a bunch of wusses, really. And that was the same thing that the Roman Empire did. So we're looking forward to all that. Again, we'll run through our shows this week. This next week, we've got Rodney Stanhope starting Monday night. We don't even have a show named yet, but it's going to be a show for California and California politics and what's going on out here on the Reagan coast. You know, sometimes it's disappointing. It's okay for little boys to go in the little girls' rooms in the public schools out here in California. But you know, we're making some headway, too, sometimes. And we're going to focus on that Tuesday with Dan and I on Parental Sovereignty Radio with Jennifer Montrose and Stacey Toblish down in Alabama. and, of course, Rodney Stanhope out here in California. And on Wednesdays, we have nothing planned. That's the night off. And on Thursdays, we have the Free Dot Miller Show on Underground Hard Drive. We no longer do it at Contending for Truth Radio. You have to look up the Underground Hard Drive on Blog Talk. And we do that at 7 to 9 or 7 to 8 sometimes on Thursday nights. But the two-hour block before that, the IRP6, who we interviewed here recently, they're going to take that night and they're going to do a show each week about this travesty of justice. We're looking forward to that. And then on Fridays, my favorite, I spend my week waiting for Friday to get here when we sit around John and Betty's table and discuss the Old Testament history. And I would encourage everybody to join that. We're having a great time. You know, Hollywood doesn't even have a bit on the Old Testament. It is a mini-series. It's got good guys and bad guys. It's got crime drama. It's got everything Hollywood ever thought about putting together, and it's a beautiful, beautiful story. I would encourage everybody to pick up their Bible, get it off that coffee table, and read. Start reading the Book of Genesis, and sometimes you get to list of genealogies. You don't have to read every name in those. It's just follow the story, follow that novel. It starts in Genesis, and the Old Testament ends in Esther. Actually, the timeline of it Second Kings and Second Chronicles. Those go together. Esther's the last story, although it doesn't take place chronologically. But basically, Genesis to Esther is the story of the Old Testament. The rest of it, the poetry and the prophecy, those pieces fit into that story somewhere. You don't have to worry about reading through those. You use those more as reference. When you're reading about some of the prophets in the divided kingdom era, you're going to pick up some of those prophets and you're going to read the actual prophetic books that were the letters that were written or the prophecies that were made and they fit into there. So just get in there and read from Genesis to Esther. Read the story because it leads up to the story of Christ that continues 400 years later in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And we're getting ready to start the United Kingdom right now. We're going to start 1 Samuel chapter 1 tomorrow, this next Friday coming up. And we're going to have a discussion about Samuel and Eli and raising children. And, you know, Israel, God was supposed to be their king, and they wanted a king. And Samuel said to God, you know, they've rejected me. And God said, no, they haven't rejected you, Samuel. They've rejected me. I'm supposed to be their king. But go ahead, let them have a king. And you're going to see what happens. And if you don't think God's got a sense of humor, you see what he gave them. You know, Dan, I often use the example of Mitt Romney only in looks. The Bible describes the King Saul as a tall man, very good looking, very professional looking. He stood heads above, looks above the crowd. And then he's made king, and they go to introduce him to Israel, and they can't find him. He's hiding behind some boxes. He's afraid. and, you know, don't tell me God doesn't have a sense of humor. They asked for it. They wanted a king, and God gave them a king. And we're going to start walking through the life of Saul, and it's an insane story. Saul's cuckoo. He's really cuckoo. He's got some mental problems. And, you know, if you liked One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and, you know, a famous old movie. Let me tell you, some crazy characters in there. Jack Nicholson, I believe, won awards playing that the cuckoo guy. It was King Saul was cuckoo. He was flipped in the head, man. He laid around naked for a few days and did all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's an interesting story. But then they're going to have King David. They're going to have Mighty King David, who is as a young boy has got such a faith that God describes him as a man after my own heart. Lots of mistakes in his personal life, but a man after God's own heart. And so that's Friday mornings at 10:30. Every Friday morning, we sit around John and Betty's table, me and the ladies of the congregation where I attend, and I've been teaching this ladies' Bible class for 5 years now almost. And it's the height of my week, and we hope that you join us and follow us along in the Bible as we go through that Old Testament and look at those beautiful stories and look at the portrait that's painted of Christ the Word and His church in that Old Testament, and the personality of God that's in that Old Testament. Join us. And then on Saturday, again, next Saturday, it'll be Dan and I again here on Contending for Truth Radio with our Saturday symposium. We're gonna have a guest. Hoping Don Chamberlain's going to be on for us next week. I'm in the process of trying to get a hold of him. He hasn't been on Facebook in the last couple of days, and so I think I'm going to have to dig his number out and give him a call. But this has been Contending for Truth Radio. We're never afraid to go back to our faith. We're never afraid to go back to the creation and the creator and basic principles. That's what Contending for Truth Radio is all about. It applies to our politics. It applies to our daily lives. It applies to our judicial system. It applies to the morality of the country, and it applies to the direction of the world and the world that we leave our children someday in the great country that we live our children someday. I'm going to close out with the tree. You know, you got that tree. And I love looking at the tree. I taught my four-year-old niece when she was three. She could explain how a tree worked. And it was basic. She said, God made the tree. And the tree's got a root, and it's got a trunk, and it's got limbs, and it's got leaves. And the leaves take the sunlight from the air, and they take the water and the nutrients from the ground, and they mix them in the leaf, and they make food for the tree. So the tree, it produces flowers, and the birds and the bees use the flowers to eat and to pollinate and to make honey, and then the flower turns into a fruit. And the fruit, it sometimes man eats the fruit. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes the fruit doesn't taste real good. But sometimes man eats the fruit, and then the fruit protects the seed, and then the seed dies. It separates from the life source, from the tree, and dies and falls on the ground. It gets buried, and then it grows into a brand new tree. And Christ said, I'm the resurrection and the life. And that tree is designed to show resurrection from the dead. God designed it that way. God didn't make the creation and then go building his plan. God built his plan and built the creation around it. And that's what the Old Testament is about. You know, we got rocks and trees and water and threshing floors and wheat and all these pictures throughout the Old Testament. And they're all pointing forward to Christ. And we come to the New Testament, and that's what we learn, that God made the tree for a reason. It shows something. And God made the rock for a reason, and it shows something. And so every time I look at the rocks, I think of when Paul said, and that rock was Christ. I remember in the wilderness, the Israelites were thirsty, and God told Abraham, go there and strike that rock, and water came out of the rock, and took care of the thirst of the people. In the New Testament, the writers say that rock was Christ. He provides the living water. And I look at the tree, and I see a death, a burial, and a resurrection. And I stand here looking out my front gazebo, and I look at this mountain that I'm going to say we can almost consider it a little hill, but it blocks my entire view. Got a meadow across the street, down to the river. At the base of the river, the mountain just goes straight up, and it's probably 500 feet high. Something to that effect, maybe 1,000 feet high. And it's covered in trees. It's covered in oak trees, and it's got some pine trees on it here and there, and it's got some huckleberry trees. It's got all kinds of different trees. And as I look out there and I see those trees, that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of that seed dying, being resurrected, and turning into a brand new tree. And that's what it's all about. We're never afraid to go there. Then there's rocks on that hill over there, too. That really helps. We want to thank all of our listeners for coming and listening this morning. We've got some people that are just really making an effort to try and listen when they can. And we want to really appreciate you guys as well. Join us again. It won't be until, I believe, next Monday night before Contending for Truth Radio lights up again with Rodney Stanhope. So, we're going to close out with a little bit D-Rock Country. That's another two. We need to get on the show here pretty quick. And we're going to close out. D-Rock, man, he's got some incredible, incredible songs. But my all-time favorite of all his music is Keep On Keeping On. And listen to the words, folks, because this is what it's about. It's Pong. We got to pass that. We got to send that ball back over to the other side. And we're going to keep on keeping on until we do it. And it's the pattern of man. Thank you, and have a nice day.
There will be days that just go on, make you wanna holler and shout, hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Darkness comes before the dawn. I beg you, won't be.